So, this is the title of my presentation. I'm not even going to let you read it. It's too long. Okay. So, my specialty is work-related musculoskeletal disorders, and for the rest of this presentation, it's going to be WMSDs. And in Washington State, this is the most prevalent and most costly injury type in all of the industries. Earlier this year, my group published a technical report, and it's titled Work-Related Musculoskeletal Disorders of the Back, Upper Extremity, Hand, Wrist, and Knee. And basically what it does is it describes WMSDs in claims data in terms of incidence rates, rate ratios, costs, severity rates. And it was done, we collected data, or we analyzed data between 2002 and 2010. What we found was 43% of the compensable workers' comp claims were non-traumatic WMSDs of the back, upper extremity, and knee. And if you want the whole citation, it's at the end of the presentation. These claims cost approximately $400 million, and it resulted in a claims rate of 90 claims per 10,000 FTEs. What we also find within the claims rate, claims data, is that the WMSD claims rate varies greatly between companies or subsectors within an industry. This is a table that just sort of explains that, or illustrates that, in that within a sector, an industry sector, you can have a wide range of claims rates by company. And I've highlighted some of them. For example, with the back, under healthcare, you have a claims rate that can range from 8.4 to 135, 136. And so, why is that? Why is there such a range? And is it because, I need to turn my page. Okay. So, maybe it is something within the work environment, the physical factors that they do, the type of work that they do, that is different even though they are classified as being the same. And so we created a study to look at this. It's a NIOSH-funded study for 5 years. We are in the last 5 months of our study. Well, technically 2 months, but... And we looked at 6 industry sectors. And these were... Got to turn my page again. Agriculture, manufacturing, construction, wholesale retail trade, healthcare and social services, and services. We didn't do mining because there isn't a whole lot of mining in Washington State, and we didn't look at transportation because we just didn't have the manpower to follow truckers. There weren't that many of us. We used workers' compensation data to identify high risk workplaces for WMSDs of the back, shoulder, hand, wrist, and knees. And then we assessed workplaces based on these claims rates, hoping to identify some links between the claims rates and to understand why there are differences in these rates. The last thing we are attempting to do is to actually develop an industry-specific WMSD hazard surveillance tool. And I'll explain how we're doing that in a little bit. Our study hypothesis was that those companies with high claims rates of WMSDs have a higher exposure or higher risk level than those companies that have lower claims rates. Oops. We use the workers' compensation data, like I said, to identify companies with high claims rates and low claims rates. I don't think I need to describe the workers' compensation data. But we collected all compensable claims for WMSDs between the years of 2002 and 2010. These claims had to be at least 18 months old because we would like them to show some maturity. And then, what else? And we calculated the claims rate by body part. So for the back, the hand, wrist, the shoulder, and the knee. In the claims, we're basically looking for injuries that were overexertions, repetitive motions, bodily reactions, rubbed or abraded, that resulted in a disease or disorder of the musculoskeletal system, that resulted in abnormal nerve or nervous system conditions, strains, sprains, and rheumatisms. Once we got those claims rates for each body part, we ranked them from highest to lowest. Then we identified companies in a high claims rate group, which was the top 25th percentile, and a low claims rate group, which was the bottom 25th percentile. And we did this for each industry, each body part. Gets really complicated after a while. Based on these, we recruited 96 companies. Technically, we've only recruited 95 right now. We have one more to go, and we're this close to getting it. But for each industry sector, and for each body, we recruited 16 companies. There were two pairs for each body part, and we paired them by four-digit NAICS code and size. And within each pair, we had one company that had a high WMSD claims rate and one company that had a low WMSD claims rate. So basically, we had 96 companies to recruit, and so far to date, we have conducted over 140 site visits. It means I wasn't in the office a whole lot. We used a convenient sample just because of the sheer number of companies that we had to visit and recruit. And when we went to these companies, we wanted to observe a representative number of jobs at that site. We asked each company to provide us with a employees list by job title. And based on that, we looked at a different number for depending on the size of the company. For a large company, which was more than 100 employees, we looked at 20% of their workers, a minimum of 30. For medium, it was 50 to 100 employees, and 30% of their workers, minimum of 25. And then for small, it was 20 to 49 employees, 50% of their workforce we observed. All this chart does is show you the sampling distribution of the companies we looked for. Because it was a convenient sample, we didn't balance it by company size. We just took the first company that said yes. Okay? And so you can see by each industry sector, sometimes, for example, the first row, we had four companies that represented the knee, and they were all medium size. No small, no large. Okay, so now we get into the exposure assessment side of it all. Surveillance data done. We went into each company and we assessed risk factors that are associated with WMSDs. And we used already validated, widely used assessment instruments. And I don't know if you're familiar with any of them, but one was the strain index, which assessed hand activity, hand strain. Another one was called the QEC, quick exposure checklist, that assessed back posture, shoulder posture, hand posture, stress levels, pace, a whole bunch of things. We used the ACGIH-TLV for lifting, and then, of course, because we're from Washington, we used the Washington Hazard and Caution Checklist. And between all of these, there was actually duplication, but there was a reason for that, which I'll explain in a little bit. From each of these assessment tools, there were multiple variables, and when we finished collecting the data based on their scoring system, we stratified the scores on to different risk levels, and these are either low risk, moderate risk, high risk, or very high risk. Okay. And like I said before, what we hope to do with the WMSD exposure data were two things. One is to look for possible explanations for the differences in the rates within the section, and then two, to develop this industry-specific hazard surveillance tool. And there will be six of them. So the next two slides are just examples of the exposure profiles that we found, or in healthcare. That's the industry we're currently looking at. What you're looking at is the risk assessment for heavy lifting using the Washington checklist. The green is the low back rate, the red is the high back rate. And from our hypothesis, what you want to see is a profile where the green group, the low rate group, has more jobs in the low risk than the high risk. And for the red group, the high rate group, you want more jobs at the high risk side than the low risk side. And you kind of see shades of this here. The thing is that between the two different groups, the differences aren't statistically significant. And I will pose some possible explanations in a second. Okay, another example. This is dynamic back posture. So basically, how much are you moving your back? It was evaluated using the quick exposure checklist, and it's for healthcare again. Same coding, green is for the low risk, low rate, red is for the high rate. And in this, you will see that for the green group, the low back rate, you are having more jobs at the lower risk end than the higher risk end. But for the red group, the high rate group, it's not the same. We wanted to see more jobs in the higher end, risk end, and we're not. Okay. And I'm showing you the good and I'm showing you the bad. So, because of the data that we're working with in healthcare, and we picked healthcare to work on first because we figured it was a rather homogeneous population. We went to nursing homes. We didn't go to hospitals and nursing homes. We didn't go to group homes and nursing homes. They were all nursing homes. And so using all the variables from the risk assessment tools that apply to each body part, we run some statistical analysis, see which variables become statistically significant. In healthcare, there aren't a whole lot of them. And so we choose for the hazard surveillance checklist those that are statistically significant. But then we look at their exposure profiles to choose more variables that closely align to our hypothesis. And then based on our observations of those companies, we confirm that those variables actually make sense, that we witnessed that. And those are the variables that we will include in the hazard surveillance tool. These are the potential risk factors that will be included for healthcare. For the back, it's dynamic back movement, back flexion greater than 45 degrees for more than 2 hours, and lifting, measured by the ACGI-HTLV. For the shoulder, it's posture movement, stress level, and a factor we call structural constraints, which is basically how much freedom a worker has to in their job to accomplish their goal. So an assembly line worker who just does one widget at a time, strong constraints. But a manager, like my boss, very few constraints. He can do whatever he wants. Hand wrist, we have wrist posture repetition, pace of work, hand strain, and again, structural constraints. And finally, the knee, prolonged sitting, lifting, and stress. Okay. So, this is the first time we've ever done this type of study, and we ran into some challenges, both with the workers' comp data and the exposure data, and I've listed a few here. In the analysis, we found that the correlation between the rates, there were some high correlations between the rates. Between the back and the shoulder, correlation was 0.87. Between the back and the knee, it was 0.83. The workers' compensation rates were not independent, meaning that the same rate was used for each subject within a company. Our exposure tools did not collect all of the potential risk factors that we observed. For example, in agriculture, in orchards, there is no assessment tool that evaluates the risk level for walking on uneven ground. But that could be a potential risk factor for a knee injury. Or climbing up and down ladders in an orchard. We don't have an assessment tool that assesses the risk level of that. In healthcare, unique in itself, when you roll a patient, you push the patient to rest on their side. But in the traditional definition of pushing with manual material handling, that that movement doesn't match. So how do we characterize that risk? Can we use the push-pull-carry Liberty Mutual charts? Maybe not. Or what about that healthcare aide who is assisting a patient who can partially weight-bear and transfer them from the bed to the chair? Again, the traditional definition of lifting is a worker who fully supports the weight of an object. Human beings are not objects, but how do we characterize that exposure of helping them and not fully supporting them? It's not a lift in the traditional sense. So how do we characterize that exposure? The next thing is that the claims data are an ecological measure. And basically what that means is that the outcome, the group classification of high rate, low rate, is not directly related to the individual assessment. The outcome was determined long before the assessment. Our claims data, we have an 18-month lag period. And then, once we calculated that claims rate, it could be up to 5 years before we actually assess the exposure. So our assumption is the exposure we see now is the same as the exposure that caused that claims rate, which was really 18 months before that claims rate. Okay. And then the other, I'm almost done, I promise. The exposure was assessment was not based entirely on observations. We were only there for 1 day, maybe looking at each worker for 10 to 15 minutes. So we had to ask them about what they did when we weren't there. In certain occupations, like in agriculture, it's very seasonal. In orchards, we're good. In orchards, you have summer to November, picking like crazy, depending on the crop. Then you go into this period of field maintenance and pruning. And then in the spring, it goes into thinning and then back into harvest. Very different exposures in each of those. So we had to ask them what they did and hopefully get them to recreate it. And then the last one is, technically we only looked at two pairs in each body part for each industry. It's a very small sample size. So to increase our sample size, and I'm going to try and make this as clear as I can, we allowed other company pairs that we saw that may not have been chosen for a particular body part, but because they had a high rate and a low rate in the pairing, we included them into that body part. And the result of that was the absolute difference between the claims rates may have been really small. Or in other pairs, it may have been huge. Like in backs, the claims rates in healthcare between high and low, the absolute difference will be large. But maybe in knee, what makes a high and what makes a low is really small. And so those are the challenges that we faced. That's all I got. Thanks for listening. I hope I didn't bore you too much. Questions? Concerns? Yes.
So you had, a lot of challenges. So what about other measures? Could be safety culture, individual factors, companies, deliberately making sure their workers didn't apply for compensation because they're paying under the table.
Right.
Were you able to take into any, potentially these other possible reasons?
We did collect that data. I just didn't explain it.
Oh, okay.
But we did two other things. We did injured worker interviews, and that was to get more contextual in data about what causes the injury. Then the other thing we did is what we called management labor interviews, and that was to get at the safety culture, organizational culture. And we had sort of two types for that management labor. We found one management, air quotes, representative, and one labor, air quotes, representative, and they filled out the same survey. And so we can get some sort of description on the safety culture, but also the discord between the management view and the labor view to see if that can contribute to the injury experience. Anything else? Hello.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics is starting a new survey called the Occupational Requirements Survey, where we're measuring among other things, physical demands, actual movements required of the occupation.
Right.
And we're having a running an issue about where we can observe the work and where we cannot observe the work. And you had that same issue.
Very much so.
So could you tell me, you know, where you were not able to observe the work, are you as confident, and any other thoughts or ideas about that?
So we couldn't observe the work for two reasons. The first reason was it just didn't occur when we were there. The second reason was it was too dangerous for us to go into that environment to actually observe the work. In either case, the best thing that we could do was ask the workers to describe what they did. And what I found the most useful in terms of characterizing their work demands is to ask them the question, what is the most physically difficult thing that you do in your job? And let them answer that question, and then you can ask other leading questions. If it's a survey, it's a little bit more difficult, but if you ask it as an open-ended question, then you can do some text type of stuff.
So Nikki, how does that exactly work in terms of, has somebody taken a worker's description of their job activities and then actually sort of, not necessarily observe them, but observe other representatives of that job activity and sort of correlate between the self-report relative to the actual observed values? Maybe Barbara's team have done that.
Yeah, so it wasn't assessing self-report of the job to observed of the job. What they did, my coworker Stephen Bowen and Barbara Silverstein, what they did was to evaluate hand grip, self-reported hand grip forces, and actual measured hand grip forces. So with a hand dynamometer, we asked a worker to recreate the force that they use, I don't know, widgeting something. And then the assessment by, they did the assessment subjectively on a scale of 1 to 5. And then they used the dynamometer to measure it, and we could link the dynamometer reading to their subjective reading. And it was pretty close. What I did find about self-reports, and this is something that I've found repeatedly, is that workers become accustomed to the job that they do. And when we go in and ask them, so how much do you think that thing that you lift 20 times a minute weighs? And they will say, oh, I don't know, probably 10 to 15 pounds. And when you actually weigh it, it's 40 pounds. So they become accustomed to that weight that they don't even recognize anymore, that it is actually a substantial weight. Or you ask them in sawmills when they're flipping boards, it's an extremely strong pinch grip. But when you ask them, how, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard do you think you pinch the boards? And they'll go, oh, I don't know, I barely touch it, 2 or 3. But then when you measure that, get them to recreate that pinch force, it's off the scale. I've never seen pinch forces that high, where they're pinching with 50 pounds of force. You know, I don't know what other industry can, I don't even know if there's a professional athlete that could do that level. And if they could, good for them. More power to them. That it? Okay, thank you for listening.